Hello and welcome to the Comedy Club Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Kaufman. We are here at the Comedy Club of Kansas City. Please subscribe. Just hit that share button, subscribe. Tell all your friends, check out everything we're doing here at the Comedy Club across the board, simply at the Comedy Club, KC. I'm here today. Very funny, Mr. Stephen Taylor.
Hello, hello.
I love this whole top thing. I love the shirt. I love the shirt underneath it.
Thank you. Thank you. This is a Cheating Snakes exclusive. Do you know them?
No.
You should check them out. It's a KC brand. They do a bunch of wrestling stuff too.
Real like shirts?
Yeah, Hull shirts is like all like their design.
I love Chiefs. I love gambling.
Uh-huh. This was right up your alley there. Yeah, they do everything, man. They're off the wall. They do like fun design stuff. They do Post Malone's merch now.
Really?
Yeah, it used to be next to the Barrel. He was like in the studio next to the Barrel. So we met there and then he just kind of blew the fuck up.
Yeah, what's it that? What's the name of him again?
Cheating Snakes.
Okay, check him out.
Do you have that ashtray? I don't want to
fuck this up.
Yeah, I do.
What a great start to the podcast. Just immediately logistical problems. I'm sorry.
I'm a diva.
You know what? Of all the problems we can have, it's where's the ashtray?
There are like four laying around here. It's kind of low. There's more ashtrays than there are. Well, I was going to say video equipment. Then I saw this one behind you, but it's close. It's very close.
Where are you from originally?
Louisiana. Originally North Louisiana, which is not the cool part. Been up Kansas City for like 10 years.
Okay, so you moved to KC 10 years ago.
Did you start comedy here in Kansas City?
Yeah, so in North Louisiana, part of the reason I moved is just because there's nothing. There's like, I'm going back to headline down there and I'm having to do it at like an event space.
So Derek Stroop, kind of the same thing when he's
obviously from where, Alabama?
Something. And there was just, and he started just at a bar he worked at. There was nothing around. And he would just, and that, so he just kind of made his own thing there.
Yeah. When I was in college, I was like just the only person that I knew that was like into comedy, like watched stand up and cared about, had a favorite comedian or whatever. And so whenever I found like how you could just do stand up, I was like, oh, I had to find somewhere where you could do stand up. And so I interviewed for jobs in Denver and Kansas City. Didn't get the Denver job, got Kansas City, and was bummed immediately because it's like, oh,
there's a lot more comedy.
And there wasn't weed at the time, which was like a pretty big issue.
What a great moment.
Yeah, that was a big day for
all. What a great moment.
And that's, oh my God. When I started in Kansas City, there was just like nothing. So I'm really thankful for it because we got to like, everybody that started around the same time I did, I feel like is a pretty unique voice in comedy. Like they're not, they don't sound like other comedians because you were building your stuff. It'd have been 2015. I moved here January 9th of 2015. January 10th, my car got stolen.
So Stanford's was what, over?
They were at that time.
Santa Square?
Yeah, 19th and Metcalf. At that time, they were, down in OP, and they were going to move to the Legends again, and then they were going to move downtown. That's like, they were in the death spiral.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, there wasn't a lot of opportunity for younger comedians on main stages and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you could get like, I did well at the Clash of the Comics for the Funny Bone.
Yeah.
Back when it was the Improv. And so that started to get me work. But like now that I've been in comedy longer, you go to different scenes and you're like, oh yeah, we didn't have anything. Like we were just, putting up anything that we could put up and building whatever we could build.
So where did you go up for the first time?
Arts Bar, Monday.
What a great place.
What a great place. I miss it so much. We almost bought it in the pandemic because it was like, and then I found out you actually had to like have credit to buy something. And I was like, oh, never mind. We're not going to, see, you're not going to buy it. They were giving it for so cheap, dude. That was so rushy.
They were selling it.
Yeah. So they were selling like, you know, you'd still be paying rent. It's still the spot owned by the same dude who was owning it before, but it wouldn't be Arts Bar anymore.
Hey, one of the best like performing years of my life, it's most fun, was at the Arts Bar when we were doing cough drops out of there, 2014, 15.
Yeah.
God, just such a great spot.
Yeah. That was the first place I saw Lucha Raptor, one of their shows. And I remember being like, what the hell is this? And, you know,
they would do comics versus poets.
Now that I did, that like 3 years in a row. And that I think is a show that we should bring back. I tried to do it at the Barrel. I've gotten the permission of the producer who produced it to bring it back. But a lot of the scenes are fractured now, and it's just a pain in the ass to do a New Year's Eve show. But I think as a show concept,
it's a lot.
It's so good.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's very funny. Making fun of poets.
It's like you take two of the arts where the performers bring the least amount of people and you put it together.
Yes. And somehow that brings people. It was sold out every single time. And yeah, you got to like. I remember Corso, who's a comic and a magician, really a Renaissance man. He was also doing poetry. And you got to say, oh, I want to go up after somebody. Like, oh, hey, I volunteer. Like, let me go up next, coach. And I'll do my set. And my set was just making fun of Corso because it's a comedian doing poetry. So, you know, he can like take a joke. And it was the most fun like any of us ever had was shooting the shit backstage at Poets versus Comics and listening to the crowd hate the comedy. Like they're poets, like they do not like comedy. So you would hear a poet, it's Poets versus Comics. You would hear a poet do a story about like their assault and how they survived it and how horrible it was. And then I would go up and do an act out of how stubbing my toe sounds like coming and just moan into a microphone for minutes, you know, like way too long. And it would their silence really like you could hear people laughing in the back, like in the green room, like in the stage behind you,
laughing at the silence,
laughing at how yeah people are not on board with it, and it's the best too.
That's why I'll tell, especially at the open mic, I'll tell them like, dude, if you're only getting last in the back of the room, you're probably not getting last, man.
Yeah, not the ones that you want, not unless. At Arts Bar, that was one of the plays. I do miss having the open mic spots where Red Front was kind of the same way, where you could just, you're just there to get laughs from anybody. It didn't matter because you couldn't even get comics to laugh in those spaces.
Dude, I think we started that Red Front open mic first years and years ago in like 2014. We get everybody gets paid open mic. Everybody got $1. Like every and like we realize that you're paying people to do comedy who have like never done comedy before.
Right. Yeah, well, I in one of those things that I admired the hustle of, but I as a producer, I'm like, that's the worst idea I've ever heard.
That's it. That people out.
Sure.
The bar was paying, you know, the 25, 30 bucks of the.
Okay, nice. Yeah. And then you curate the list. It is good to be like, yeah, we're only doing 25.
We got the Bronx Pizza to sponsor it at first too. They would give us a giant pizza to cut up and put out the Atomics and everything for the people. I mean, it was a
that was not the vibe when I got there. When I got there, it was a lot more blow and lawyers with escorts that you couldn't bring up. It was like the one they were like, don't bring up the escorts, and you're like, but they're so fun.
I think we lost. I don't know if this is why. But I'm pretty sure we lost it to the Bronx deal because there was one week, I don't remember why, I picked up the pizza and something happened and I couldn't go. And so like, I just posted this picture of my giant baby, like almost sitting in the box with the pizza. And I posted that adorable picture online. And then they're like, we're not going to continue. I'm like, yeah.
I bet up. You can't put a baby in the pizza box. That's a number stress of advertising. The Bronx, are they still open?
No.
And we see why. They lack courage.
They should have posted it. You know, and that's look, you can put your baby and half a pizza in this box.
I ordered a pizza and this was all you sent me.
Yes, sir. Hi.
I think I got the wrong order.
This is, yeah. This is not what I wanted.
You gotta get that driver back, you know, man.
Yeah, I said pepperoni,
not pooperoni,
extra pepperoni. That was it. I didn't ask for anything more. Yeah, I loved all of those open mics when that was first coming up. I think they did like a big service to everybody, and pandemic really fucked up a lot. But it seems like it's coming back around. Like you had those smaller open mics that really just exist to make you miserable. And I think that's the joy in comedy is like that it's a bad art form for public consumption. And like, unless you're going to a place to see comedy, it is a bad art form. Like if I go into a restaurant or a bar and I see somebody setting up a PA system, like without a TV. So I'm like, this is not karaoke. This is definitely going to be either stand up or trivia. I'm like, we have to get the fuck out of here. Like even as somebody who loves comedy, if I see it being set up as a free show in a bar, I'm running the other way.
Now
I'll do it every day. I'll do that show immediately, but it's
not happy about it.
No. It's a bad idea to spring it on people, but we do it all the time.
So tell me about Barrel of the Bottoms. It's just the gist, like you had about what, 40 seats down there?
Yeah, it was a small indie club. It was like arts bars. We wanted it to be like arts bar was a really intimate 70 seat space. And my buddy had a studio that he did woodworking out of and
in the West Bottoms.
And we wanted a podcast studio because we thought the future was podcasting, which we were right on.
We're
correct.
This is a part of our mark.
And this is $1 million venture right here. This is like this. At this podcast, look at how far we've all got. But honestly, I mean, like this idea was kind of what we were doing for a little bit of just like, all right, let people come in and podcast and make their whatever they want to make. It was just like a creative maker space is how
you had other shows coming in and recording there stuff.
Yeah.
Then in your studio.
Yeah. I mean, we had Adam Ray and Travis Kelsey come in right in the middle of the pandemic and just like, hey, we need a studio. We had Stan Hope that we did like remote stuff, but it was always for like locals.
Yeah.
So, you know, people would come in and they had shows that they did for months or years, or some people that just tried it out. But then it was like you would go in and write, or you would go in and like shoot a sketch or whatever you wanted to do. And then we started doing shows, and the shows could seat about 40. And for about 2 years, we were probably doing about 50 to 60. And then we did Sam Talent and we had like, I think, 80 people in there. Standing room in the middle of summer, so fucking hot. Sam, I think, had to change shirts twice in the middle of the set because it was like, I mean, it was the hottest room I've ever been in, but it felt like a punk show. You know, it felt like you were in a mosh pit. And you know how Sam does comedy.
So your buddy kind of had the space already?
Yeah, he had the space. He was living there, working there. And then we were like, oh, we should do a podcast studio. And then I had never been there. Seeing the West Bottoms to a kid from North Louisiana is like walking into Meth Ed Disney World. You know, it's like a whole new world. It's you're using like a cattle elevator to go up into this like weird artist loft. And
I think we're like third floor or something.
Yeah, fourth. I think we were fourth floor, but there might have been a basement. So I don't know how they counted. It was a cattle elevator. So it was a freight elevator. So, you know, you pull it up. We got a passenger elevator like the last 2 years.
Okay.
Which was nice, but it's not as charming.
And so I did a lot of good comics to that small room.
A lot of shows for locals. You had classes here and there, right? Or at least workshops. I'll probably put it as workshops.
Yeah. We had people that would do comedy or like improv classes. I'm like pretty anti-class.
Yeah.
I don't love the idea of doing comedy class, but I think improv makes sense to do comedy classes.
And now I've got once in a while, but I'm not charging for classes, and I also don't charge for those workshops. I just want people to be better, and I want them to be like know what they're doing, you know, especially early on when they first, you know, how to hold a microphone, even just like
yeah. It's good to have like I know Stanford used to do that thing like before mic they would go through it.
I just don't know how to do it because their mic would be the only show of the night. It's a late show here. We have a 7 o'clock. I don't know how to get the comics in and to do a workshop.
Oh, yeah. Such a short flip. I don't think it's necessary anymore. You know, I mean, it's like helpful and whatever. And doing workshops are good for sure. But like, you know, we would do workshops like me and somebody else who travels or somebody else who produces would just stand up and like do Q&A. And then do a writer session.
How long did you run that room for?
I have no idea. I think it's like we started in maybe like 2018, maybe 2017, and then finished in. No, you know what? Yeah, we started in 2017 because I was still working at Verizon. And then we finished like 2020. Maybe it was this year. I can't keep track. This has been a pretty crazy year.
About so just within the past year, you would have to.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And was that a person, were you just like, I know you started performing more, you started getting a lot busier, traveling a lot more. Did that have a factor in the room? Then you were looking for a different room at a point too.
Yeah, I mean, we just, the West Bowdens is getting gentrified. It's getting turned into like corporate bullshit, a lot of it. And so our rent was starting to go up, which you're not making a lot of money on 40-person comedy shows. Everything was fine, but we always thought that it was going to get like, we thought we were going to get kicked out every year. Like the day that we got in there, we thought we were going to get kicked out. And because we never asked permission, hey, can we start a podcast studio?
Yeah.
We just built a podcast studio. And then we gave people like the code to get in. They would have to call us to get into the building. And then we gave them a Bluetooth key to get into the space. So we like rewired everything. We didn't ask anybody. I probably shouldn't say it on a microphone and something that is any case to say, but it's probably, they don't give a shit anymore. But it was definitely like, we'll see how long this lasts from the very beginning. And then they found out we had a podcast studio, and then we had to be like, all right, well, we also do shows. And they were like, how many people are there? And we were like, oh, I don't know, like 30. And they were like 25 max. So then we had to deal with that for a little while. Like, it was just always something. They were okay because we were paying our rent on time, but they did not love us. They were not like stoked that we were there and doing it. So they were always looking for something. And then towards the end, yeah, it just became like pretty tough to navigate that relationship.
Talk about, you were a teacher for years. That was your job, your primary source, right?
Yeah.
What did you teach first? What did you teach? And then talk about what led to you getting fired. Because I know that kind of spawned, you got let go for, I don't know the exact story, but I heard a good amount of this.
Sure. Yeah. I was a teacher. I taught in the city for a few years. I taught English language learners and always social studies for everything. And then I moved to the suburbs with my wife, ex-wife, and was doing like an alternative school out there. And so in the city, you can get away with anything. But I had always told places that I was a comedian, and my comedy's always been like on the raunchy, edgy. I'll talk about race or whatever. You know, it's comedy. It's whatever. It's going to be offensive. So I always knew it was going to be a problem. But in the city, it didn't matter. But in the suburbs,
it mattered.
Yeah, you were just waiting on something. And what's wild is that it wasn't like, I had jokes about teachers not being able to, you know, like the only way you get fired is if you have sex with a student. Like, I was doing bits about that, you know, like things that were obviously not kosher to say. And that wasn't why I got fired. It was me. I posted, you just make TikTok videos. You got to do the bullshit. You got to do the rigmarole as a comic now. So I just made a TikTok video and then made a couple like really what were silly jokes.
In the video.
About crop dusting kids.
This wasn't even like you said in class. This was about a video.
Yeah, it was a video that I posted, but I filmed it in my classroom, like after hours, because the lighting's good and it looks like a classroom.
It's good lighting.
Guys, lighting. I don't have to set up
any. Giving everyone the Bluetooth key, we're going to start turning into a podcast.
I was doing it. I built a podcast studio in that school. So I used my resources. But yeah, it was like always after school or whatever, and you'd just be bored and you're thinking about it. You're like, oh, I got to make TikToks. Teachers like TikToks, so I'll film something about students. And then it just, the first one I did blew up and was a problem. And they were like, you have to delete this. You have to stop doing this. And I didn't want to. I had a really hard time. So I just did.
You told them no?
Yeah, I was like, well, I basically just kept telling them, like, tell me what I can say. Tell me where the line is. Is it because I did it in my classroom?
Did they not want you filming at school?
They wanted me to not do TikToks. They wanted me to delete TikTok completely. So they wanted me to be like
Spari. She just started using a stage name for a long time early on because she was afraid of that. Mm-hmm. Blow over.
Once you get tenure, you're fine. But I never had tenure. And I tried to use a stage name in school. I tried to use like a fake name in school. It was like, I already go by Steven Taylor. So once I moved to the suburbs, I was like, can I go by my middle name? And they were like, no. And it was like,
switched.
Yeah, it would have been so easy. Switch my stage name. Yeah, but who wants to
live in the
Griffin? If you want to know my social, I'll give it to you.
No, just the last four.
Yeah. Six. Sierra, what is it? The last four of my social?
239.
Okay, yeah, she's got it. I like Taylor better. Yeah. It's definitely more authoritative, but I feel like Mr. Griffin.
Mr. Griffin's got a ring to it, and it doesn't matter at that point. You're like, just call me Mr. G.
Yeah.
T.
They call me Mr. T. That was like always the easiest. Yeah. They didn't get any of the jokes. They didn't make any of the connection.
Is there no talk in Machia Budget?
Yeah. No, they're just lazy. They just, it was not a bit to them. They were just.
So you get them getting let go, and you kind of ran with it though, because aren't you running a teacher's like tour now?
So before that, I was doing the teacher tour. So we had done the teacher tour out of a friend's van with like setting up our own PA, our own spotlights, going into breweries. We did it all through Louisiana because me and one of the other guys are from Louisiana. So we did Arkansas to Louisiana to Texas. And then came back up, and that next August, we toured for like a month just out of the van. And then I went back to school and was like, all right, this went well. I think we want to keep doing this. I got to start doing socials. So I'll make these TikToks for these teacher shows, you know, and maybe that'll do well. And then that's when that happened. And so that coincided with the guy I tour with got fired from Board Teachers because they found out he was touring with us.
Oh,
so then we were like, well, now we have to do this. Like, they're now we both have enemies. Like, Board Teachers has made you an enemy, and the Olathe Public School District has made me the worst.
We are the enemy.
We have to like vanquish, you know, we have to like do something. So we started doing the Unteachables tour, and it just like, we both had experience producing. We were both.
Who do you do that with?
It's me, Lou Ferris, and then Joe McKenna is our third. He's in our thruple. He's got the van. Great host. Very funny guy.
I do all three of you.
All three of us, and then we started doing a Q&A portion just to get like something different. And you want to prove that you're funny on the spot too. Like, our sets are good. They were great, but I got tired of listening to my friend's teacher sets every fucking night in a brewery. And I've got really tired of having to do an hour of teaching material. It was good, but at a certain point, you're like, let's just cut this down to 20 and then let's riff for, 30 minutes.
See, you guys do kind of do teacher material about teaching in school and stuff.
Yeah, it's either about teachers or about like education or about students, or it's like got some tie-in somehow, and then a transition may go into something that has nothing to do with teaching, right? But like everything, I would say out of a 20-minute set, you're gonna have probably, you know, at least half of the time is going to be talking about education.
You guys are selling pretty well now.
Yeah.
And you're doing clubs.
Yep.
You're not just doing bars anymore.
No bars. Well, the last tour we did was 2 months. We did like 40 shows in 60 days. And it was like only one of them was a bar show, and we didn't need to do it. And it was honestly one of our tougher ones, 'cause you had to, the setup and tear down fucking sucks.
So I think a show like that too, you like, kind of want more of that control environment with the, you know, the teacher show and stuff like that.
Yeah, and ultimately we just want to be comics, right? So like the goal is not to do a show in a brewery. We've done that a million times. The goal is like, we want to go to comedy clubs and have them be like, oh, Steven Taylor, he sold tickets.
Yeah,
like I don't remember how. I remember seeing him. I remember being happy,
and they'll bring you back as Steven Taylor.
What was the shift for you guys that helped you start selling?
We had always been, you start at the beginning. We built like a list. We had people like, hey, yeah, come back. We want to see you when you come back. Here's our email. So you build an email list. And then it was, we were always selling well. When I went on the road as a comic without
your stuff, really just like with a notebook sign up, or do you have like a digital sign up for your email in a way?
Now we do a digital. So now on the Q&A, it's a link tree. So you sign on to put in your questions, and then you put in your emails.
Everybody at the show logs in, and you just bam that.
If they want to put their email down, they put their email down. And so that's like all kind of relatively new. But the point being, like when I first started doing tours with me and Aaron Naylor, sleeping on dog beds, we weren't like selling tickets every night. But with the teacher show, it was like very quickly like, oh, even if we do it for free or even if we do whatever, you would do a free show with your buddy and you wouldn't, you'd have 10 people show up.
Yeah.
But with the teacher thing, it always had like a base. Oh yeah, we could go into any place and like get 40 people to come out for this marketing thing.
It's great. A niche audience, a name, something like that is fantastic.
It's also nice because like I there is a vacuum on very funny people in that realm. Like there are Andrea being an exception to the, you know, like there are a few comics who happen to be teachers. There are mostly teachers who are like, oh, I could do comedy. And they start doing it that way. So I think for us, it's been like a pretty big breath of fresh air. And like, I think audiences seem to relate to it a little bit more. Cause we,
it's so, I know it's your enemy. Stop.
Andrea's great. And Andrea's the homie. So I love Andrea. And
thank for that to be it. Cause she was fine. She taught for years and was finally able to like walk away or just do comedy.
Yeah, it was huge. And I think for us, I like having control. And we don't have agents. We just get to like do it ourselves and not reliant on somebody telling me, hey, here's how much money we're going to pay you for this show.
And how many shows.
Here's how many shows you get to do.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, you thought you were going to do this many? Ah, too bad. We found somebody else who had more Instagram followers. So now you're fucked. It's like I have 5,000 Instagram followers and my full-time job is comedy. Like it's... I've somehow gotten that lucky to get around the system that is in place now, which is you have to have social media followers to be a comic. So I'm hoping that I'm selling tickets without it, that hopefully it just grows.
You guys have an Unteachables page?
Unteachables page, yep.
With
Unteachables Comedy, I think. Unteachables Comedy, probably everywhere. And yeah, we post a ton of stuff. It's mostly teacher stuff.
And where can people find you and your other 5,000 followers?
At formerly Fat Steven. Join the army. Actually, the militia. On TikTok, it's got a little bit of an army. That one's doing okay. But yeah, we got a lot of content coming. I didn't post a ton during the summer because we were just on the road. But we banked up a lot of stuff that was like, we had a fun time.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Steven, thank you for doing this. Thank you for all you've done for comedy.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for booking me. Fun weekend.
Yeah, it'd be a great weekend. And yeah, look forward to having you back soon. Good luck to everything. Follow Steven Taylor. Check out him and the Unteachables when they come to a city near you. Follow us, subscribe here. You can then come see a show at the Comedy Club in Kansas City. And bye.
Nice. We did it.